Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are throwing out the old playbook and reimagining the way we build relationships with our customers. And I'm so excited to introduce our guest for today. This is Bob Mathers. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Alyssa. This is amazing.
So we were kind of chatting before we got started, talking about music and guitars and you know, working from home. But I want to know, what is your origin story? How did you get here?
That's a long story, and I'll save you the gory details. But there was something that happened to me last year that I would say forged my current outlook on things. And it was a very serious illness with my son, who is now 20. And they found a mass on his brain, and it wasn't cancerous, but it did require emergency surgery, and it could have been very serious, and we could have lost him. And I don't know, Alyssa, whether you've had anything like that or your listeners have, but usually it takes something traumatic or a life event like that or a diagnosis to force people out of their comfort zones and say, like, seriously, is this all there is? And that's the most recent example of something that happened to me that really changed how I approach my work and my clients and my friendships and my relationships with everyone in my life.
I think we all have varying degrees of traumatic events that really change the way we think about work. And I had a very similar situation. I had a newborn, and he basically like almost didn't make it. Thank God the doctors saved him. And he is a alive and thriving, you know, 9-year-old little boy. But there was a couple of days there where it was very questionable of whether or not he would make it. And as a brand new parent, a first-time parent, and someone who was trying to build a business, I had this idea in my head that, you know, I would go on maternity leave for like 6 or so weeks, and then I would be back at it. And actually, I think I had told people I'll be back in like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I have an emergency C-section and a kid who almost doesn't make it and spends multiple weeks in the NICU. And I had a real change in perspective because my business, I loved it. I loved what I was building. But I had to be okay with saying, you know, work isn't my life. It's my family's my life. And what I'm doing right now is my life. So I think we've both had traumatic experiences with our kids. Some people's trauma is a little less dramatic than what we have. But, you know, we think about that bad boss or that great boss, right? That really changed how we placed our expectations.
Yeah. And God, I can't imagine how scary that would have been as the mother of a newborn. I think, you know, when things like that happen, I find, at least for me and people I've talked to, you kind of live in this pocket that's like, oh my God, I'm just so grateful for everything in my life. I'm never going to sweat the small things anymore. I'm really going to be intentional and focused on the things that really matter in my life. And that pocket usually collapses in 2 or 3 weeks, no matter how traumatic these events are. Our life has a way of snapping back into its original shape, and you're waking up at 2 in the morning, worried about the same useless shit that you were worried with before. And you said, I swore I wouldn't let this happen. And it happens every time.
It does. I was consulting for a client, a big company, right? And everything was always on fire, but also everything also required like 72 layers of approvals to get through. And I had someone who she lived in the UK, and she looked at us and she goes, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this work? Because we're not doctors. Nobody here will die if we don't get that email, that internal email through this comms process. Like, no one's going to die. Someone's probably not even going to read it. And this whole idea of hair on fire, everything's collapsing, it's just not sustainable in the way that we work, especially, I don't know about you, like, I work from home. And I find myself in my office at 9 o'clock at night. What am I doing here? And if I, you know, in the olden days, that wouldn't happen because I wouldn't have access to my files and I wouldn't have access to my technology. And, you know, I'm an early adopter, so I love all things new. But some days I wonder, have we gone too far with the advancements in our tech and the ability to be connected and always on?
Yeah. And that's so interesting you say that because, yeah, establishing those boundaries, they've just sort of eroded, and it takes so much more effort to put those boundaries and to protect them, because back in the days, you know, in the old days, You actually left work and your email was at work and you didn't have a phone. And so whatever it was that was waiting for you the next day, nobody was emailing you because everybody knew you weren't there. And you had these boundaries, and now we have to create and hold those boundaries ourselves, which takes a lot of discipline. And I struggle with it. I struggle with it too. And
it's so easy to just slip one time, you know, I'll just go send that Slack message really quick.
All of a sudden it's 11 o'clock at night and you're upstairs working while, you know, your kids are downstairs or whatever, man. It just, it happens so fast.
Yeah. I had my daughter she's 5 now. But I had one of those moments where I had like a real wake up call. She was in my office. It's, you know, right before bedtime, she's got her little toy laptop and she's like clacking away on her keyboard, pretending to be working. And I said something to her and she goes, "Mother, I am in a meeting, so you need to be quiet." And I was like, oh no, you've heard that. You didn't just come up with that. I don't know where she got that. And she loves to take her laptop in the car and type away on her laptop. And I'm like, okay, this is obviously a learned behavior. And so now I'm having to make the choice of like, do I go out of my way to make sure she unlearns that behavior? And part of me is like, well, I want her to see me as like, I'm a badass. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm doing cool things. So part of me is like, hey, it's kind of cool that she, you know, sees that I'm doing stuff, but she doesn't understand it in that context. She understands it and mom wants me to stop talking because she's in a call.
Yes. And I think about this all the time, Alyssa, because when I get frustrated with my kids, I recognize that it's not them I'm frustrated with. They didn't come out with these habits. I created them. They either got them from my genes or they learned them from me. And so my frustration isn't with them. It's with me saying, God, should I have done something different? And so I think about that all the time.
Yeah, no, it's definitely hard and something that we struggle with as people who want to be engaged parents. But also, like, let's be honest, I love building my business. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I have so much fun when I'm at work. I love Mondays because I love like what I'm doing. So tell me a little bit about your business and what gets you up on a Monday morning.
Yeah. Good segue coming back to Mondays, by the way. So my business. So I'm a customer success coach and a keynote speaker. So and a podcaster. So I guess those three pillars. And so I've been working in customer success I've been working with customers my entire career, but in this thing we now call customer success for probably 10 years. And about 5 years I went out on my own. After a few years of being, you know, a leader in customer success in a few different SaaS companies, and then started working with founders of, you know, startups. Some of them are looking for their first customers, their first 10 customers, and some of them are $100 million companies trying to manage NRR and churn. So it's really the entire spectrum. And then I'm pivoting, I'm doing more public speaking because I just feel like as I'm looking down the barrel of the last 10 years of my career, yes, I love customer success. You know, is anybody going to hire a 60-year-old customer success coach? I'm skeptical, but I think they'd still pay to have me on stage and share what I've learned, not only from customer success, but from all the amazing people I've talked to on my podcast and try to make a bigger impact that way.
Yeah, I love that. I have a lot of friends in customer success. And while I don't consider myself someone who necessarily works directly, I have a lot of respect for the types of people that are willing to take on that role, right? Because we talked about boundaries. Let's talk about customer success boundaries and keeping yourself from being just glorified customer support. Like, it's a really hard role to be in because you're trying to be the champion for your customer. You're trying to bring value, but you're also trying to drive revenue and your business goals. That's a really hard position to be in. I can imagine it's very stressful for customer success.
Man, and I always say I do have a bit of a skewed perspective of the world because nobody reaches out to a customer success coach when they're killing it and everything is going great. So I hear
usually get all of the worst side of it.
Right. So sometimes when I'm on LinkedIn, I'm like, God, I mean, I'm sure there are people that read my posts. I know there are because they tell me. It's like, oh man, you're speaking right to me. But I'm sure there are people that are really killing it in customer success being like, man, this Bob, he is depressing, man. He is really seeing the worst side of this profession. But yeah, those, I do think it's a lot of people are really struggling. And you're right. It's a profession where the shit does tend to roll downhill. And without really strong leadership and boundaries, you end up being the place where all the work happens that nobody else wants to do.
Right. Which I, that has to be a very difficult position. But I was just reading an article about the peak stress curve has changed. So back when we had our email and we could only get our email at our office and not at home, you would tend to have your peak stress around 45 to 50. And people who were reporting on their stress were saying, you know, generally it's that midlife crisis concept, right? But now we're seeing peak stress is happening around 25 to 30. And so much earlier in life, we're seeing just this intense level of stress. And I see that in a lot of my customer success manager friends and people who are in those roles. It's just a role that you burn out on. You're seeing, you know, headcounts getting cut and the role is evolving and now AI is taking your job and there's so much stress. And oh, by the way, now you have a quota and now you have all of these things that you never really knew you were signing up for. So while you say, yeah, you're probably seeing all of the people who are in the worst cases, my guess is that there's a much larger proportion of people who are struggling than people who are really killing it.
Yes. And there have been a lot of changes in SaaS in particular that have put that organization under a lot of pressure and have really exposed the fact that it never really matured the way that sales and marketing has. And it's always gotten away, frankly, with kind of a nebulous value proposition to the organization and even to customers. And it really came to a head when funding dried up, when the company's growth started to slow, when a lot of them really hit challenges with the pandemic, and it exposed them to having to rationalize every dollar they spent in a way that they didn't really have to do before. So it used to be a kind of a squiggly dotted line between customer success and the value that they provide compared to sales and marketing. Sales can,
right,
it's a straight line to new logos and new revenue. Marketing is SQLs or MQLs, whatever you want to measure. Customer success, yeah, it's retention and it's net, you know, net retention revenue, whatever you want to measure it by. But there's a lot of fingers in that pie. And
yeah, I was saying, a lot of people are, sales is on, gets that credit sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's very little that customer success can actually control on its own without the buy-in from everyone else.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone else who said, I don't want to be in sales. And I looked at her and I said, hey, just so you know, everyone is either revenue generating or revenue responding, but no matter what, you're in a revenue role. So like you can't just say like, oh, I just want to drive value. That's a revenue activity. And it's okay. Like, it's okay to not want to be in sales, the dirty part of it, right? But if you're driving value for your customer and just happen to be getting paid in return, that's a win for everybody.
Yeah. And even you just mentioned kind of that dirty part of sales. I think there's definitely a perception of what sales is like. I think very few people in CS have seen really thoughtful, consultative salespeople. And if they did, they'd be like, oh my God, that's kind of what I thought customer success was.
Yeah.
But we have these stereotypes in our mind from popular culture or from movies and Glengarry, Glenn Ross. And
because they always be selling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the truth is, there's more truth in that than anyone would like to admit. I've worked in organizations like that, and it's an impossible situation for customer success to be in. And the truth is, it's a spectrum. Right. It's everybody's on that spectrum, and people are further to the Glengarry Glenn Ross end of the spectrum than most people like to admit. But if you're in customer success and that's all you've seen, sales is the last thing you ever want to do, because most people go into customer success because they don't want the pressure and the, you know, what they perceive as greasiness of sales. They want to be in it for long-term relationships and nurturing it. And, you know, whether they want to admit it, they don't want to be held accountable to a number every quarter, because that's sales and they don't want any part of that.
Well, and it's It's a little bit like, if my job is squishy, then if I do a good job, then it's because of me. And if something goes wrong, then it's not my fault because, you know, there's so many fingers in that pie. It can't possibly be my fault that this customer, you know, churned. And putting a hard number on it means that, yeah, you get to celebrate your successes and point to say, like, that was me. You also have to be accountable to your failures and say, okay, yeah, that was me too.
Man, you're so right about that. Like, yeah, it is ultimate accountability. And say what you want about sales, having a number and meeting it or not is the definition of accountability. And what that means is if you're a salesperson and you miss your number three quarters in a row, you're probably losing your job. It doesn't matter how good your story is. There's no squishy rationalization. That's the game.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, that's scary. A lot of people don't want to have that, you know, that level of visibility into their work capability. Yeah.
And then CS will kind of sit there and go, oh, I can't believe sales sold to these customers and said these outlandish things. It's like, yeah, you do the exact same thing. They're doing exactly what we're paying them to do.
Yeah.
And if that the leadership says go sell to these customers and hit this number at all costs, you do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can sit here all day and pretend like I'm, you know, holier than thou when it comes to the salespeople and their tactics. But I'm an entrepreneur. Like, I don't make money. We don't eat. Right. So at the end of the day, like, if it came down to it, yeah, I'd probably do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all, as entrepreneurs, we've all had business. We're like, I know I can do it. I don't really want to do it. It's probably more work than I need, but I don't know when my next job is coming, so I better take it. And
yep.
And then you take it, you're like, why did I do this?
That's a daily occurrence, it feels like sometimes. I think I should just put a little mirror on the wall that I write on, says, it's not worth it, don't do it.
It's that fear of, what if this is the last one? What is it? Right. Is it the last time my phone ever rings?
Right, feast or famine is real. For sure. So you work with customer success, you're a coach. What is the one thing that someone could do today to start improving their relationship with work when it comes to customer success?
So here's something, this is definitely some recency bias, but this is something that I've been obsessed with over the last week or two. And I'd love to hear if this resonates with you. So it's occurred to me even over the last year or so that there are times of day when I have my best creative emotional energy. And that means that there are times of day when I'm kind of running on empty. I can still be productive, but there's some types of work I just shouldn't be trying to do. And it kind of came to a head when I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. That means I've got to come up with four or five original ideas every week, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it is.
No, that's a lot of original content for sure.
And so I was finding myself trying to write LinkedIn posts. I try to write them a couple of days in advance, but some days it would be 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm done my meetings. I'm like, okay, crap, I don't have a post for tomorrow. Better start writing it. And it would be like an hour and a half. And you know what it's like. You're just rereading and rewriting the same paragraph over and over and over again. And I would say, screw this. And I'd go to bed and I'd get up in the morning and I'd finish it in 5 minutes. And so I started realizing that I'm a morning person. I get up in the morning, I do my exercise, I journal, I do all the things you're supposed to do. And my best time is from like 8 a.m. till noon. And then my energy tends to wane throughout the day. And then I thought about, okay, so that's what my daily routine looks like. Then I went kind of Monday to Friday and said, yeah, I don't have my best energy on Mondays. It's good, but it kind of peaks around Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So I did a heat map of my calendar and I broke every day into three blocks, like 9 to 12, 12 to 3, 3 to 5. And I kind of red, yellow, greened that. And then I did the same thing Monday to Friday. You can envision what that looks like. And then I thought about the work that I need to do. And I started with my paying clients. What are the clients that, man, they've got really challenging conversations. I really need to bring my A game. Okay. I put that as a number one. There are some clients that, you know, they're more mature. We have good conversations, but I've been working together a long time. They don't require that kind of creative energy. They're a number two. And then there's work that I can kind of do in my sleep. And then I thought about, you know, what kind of energy do I need when I record my podcast? What kind of energy do I need when I'm working on sales leads? And I sort of listed maybe the 5 or 6 different kinds of work that I need to do. And I did the same red, yellow, green for that. And then I mapped out my calendar in a way that made sure that I was reserving my most creative energy for the kinds of work that really required it, which avoided me ever getting to the end of the day and needing to get something done that really needed that creative energy and I just couldn't access it. And it also means that I don't waste creative times of day on stuff that I could kind of do in my sleep. And when I talk to people in customer success specifically, but pretty much everyone, you never seem to have enough hours in the day. So it's about being the most productive with the hours that you have and being more intentional about where you put certain kinds of work throughout your week. And I think that is going to make, I don't know, it feels like a 20 to 30% productivity improvement just by making those adjustments.
So yes, to all of that. I have what I call puttering time, and the team is familiar with my puttering time. And sometimes I just need to like walk around the house with no plan of what I'm going to do and just like let the moments come. I might be walking the dog. I might be changing, like reloading the dishwasher. One day I shampooed the carpet for like an hour and a half while I listened to a podcast. And I just needed that time to like let my brain reset. But I like to think about activities in that same way, with the added layer of energy neutral, energy negative, energy positive. Mm-hmm. This activity is energy neutral for me. I will come out of here with the same amount of energy that I came into it, right? This activity is energy draining. Basically anything to do with accounting, energy draining. That's what I'm doing. It's the only thing I can do that day because I will sap myself of every iota of joy in that process. And then there's energy positive, where I get so much out of that activity that I can do pretty much anything after because I've just like filled that energy for me. So for me, it's like recording these podcasts. I love these conversations. Building anything new. So if there's a problem to solve and I have to create a vision for it and the strategy of it, that is energy positive for me. But you're so right. If I try to do something that is energy neutral or energy negative when I'm not feeling it, I'm just going to spend an hour and a half wasting my time instead of spending 5 minutes doing my best work.
Absolutely. And so one of the things I'll do, and I know that it's never quite as clean as we imagine it, right? But even just being intentional about it, I think helps. So what I'm actually doing is creating separate Calendly links. So if you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, I always love talking to people, but that's probably not going to happen in the morning because I've got paying customers that really need my best energy. So that link will be, you know, somewhere between 1 and 4 in the afternoon, and there's separate links for different clients. And smart. I'm looking forward to seeing how this happens. Because if you just have a couple Calendly links and you're working for a company where people can book meetings whenever you're available, it's going to be virtually impossible to control this time because you're talking earlier about boundaries.
Yeah.
Like these are the boundaries I have to set if I'm going to be able to walk away from my computer at the end of the day knowing that I got everything done I could have.
Yeah. And to the best quality that it could be.
Yeah.
So Bob, tell us who in your mind of all the amazing people you've had a chance to meet, whether you know them or just their thought leaders that you follow, who is leading the charge?
Again, maybe some recency bias. I had a lovely conversation with Christy Falteruso. Christy, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing your name properly. I bet she'd be a great guest on this podcast. I'm actually having her on my podcast next week. She's going to be a blast. And I just think she does a really good job on LinkedIn of being vulnerable, providing thought leadership, sharing personal stories. And most importantly, when I got on the phone with her after kind of being LinkedIn commenting friends for a year, she's exactly who I thought she would be.
That's incredible. I follow Christy too. I love her content. So we will definitely have to reach out to Christy and see if we can get her on the podcast. Last, Bob, if someone is really connecting with you, they need help, their hair's on fire, or they just want to talk about guitars and music and get to know you better, where can they find you online?
Probably the best place is LinkedIn. And you can also listen to the podcast. It's called The Growth Mixtape, which is Just my excuse to reach out and talk to interesting people doing jobs I didn't know existed to see what I can learn from them. It's about pretty much everything except customer success. This has been amazing, Alyssa. Thank you so much.